Hey everybody, welcome back to Talking Some Sense. I'm your host Jake and this is Dave.
Say how's it something. Going? How's it going?
We're still getting used to this thing. He's forgetting that while I see him, some people don't see him because some people just do audio, right?
That's true. That's true. And my audio will be much better next week once I get the internet fixed and the laptop fixed and I'll get my new mic back on. I'll get the everything. It'll be a lot better than doing this through the phone audio.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to it. As long as this current setup is temporary, I won't fight you too hard.
Fair enough.
Let's get right into it. Today, we've got a pretty jam-packed episode. We're going to try to keep it as light as possible, but obviously, a lot happened this week in Sens land, so we're going to have to talk about it. We're going to start off with a fun Sens fact for the day, and we're going to talk about how on earth trading Alexi Yashin to the New York Islanders helped the New Jersey Devils acquire Timo Meier. It's quite the interesting situation, wasn't it, eh?
It's quite, oh my god, the trickle effect of this entire thing is absolutely mind-blowing. And when you first told me about it, I was just like, how does that make any sense? And then when you explained it to me before we recorded, I was like, boom, just mind-blown.
I feel like Steve Dangle.
Yeah, there you go.
Except I don't yell as much.
And you're not a Leaf fan.
No, I wouldn't. You'd never catch me. You'd never catch me cheering for the Leafs alive. No way, Jose. If you ever see me cheering for the Leafs, it's not me.
Fair.
Yeah. After that, we were going to obviously touch on the big, big news of the day with Michael Andlauer being formally introduced as the owner of the Ottawa Senators. We're going to talk about that whole press conference and seeing what that means for Sens fans alike and the NHL as a whole. After that, we're going to touch around the NHL. I've got two pieces of news around the NHL to talk about. I'm going to keep it light. So we're going to talk about the Vancouver Canucks, and we're going to talk about the whole BioSteel situation. Afterwards, Dave and I are going to put our thinking caps on, and we're going to talk about what on earth we're going to do with Shane Pinto and what happens with Josh Bailey. So with that all being talked about real quick, let's get right into it. We're going to start with the fun Sens fact of the day, and we're going to talk about how Alexi Yashin being traded for Senators actually helped the New Jersey Devils acquire Timo Meier. So I read this article, and if I remember, I'll link to it, but I'll get right into it. So Ottawa Senators, obviously their first ever draft pick in 92 NHL draft, they picked a guy called Alexi Yashin. Pretty good player, right?
Pretty decent, yep, yep.
Pretty good player. He was the team's first ever number 19, and he was pretty good. I'm pretty sure he hit the 90 points something once or twice, and unfortunately he fell, like things happened, contract disputes, all that blah, all that boring stuff. We're not getting into that too much, but eventually he was traded away. So Alexi Yashin was traded away to in the 2000 season in exchange for a guy named Zdeno Chara. Totally not a Hall of Famer by any means, just a player.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. A draft pick in the 2001 draft and a guy called Bill Muckelt. So we're going to start with the easiest piece of this trade tree. Bill Muckelt, he played one season with the Ottawa Senators. In 70 games, he scored 8 points and left the team via free agency. That part's done. He's gone.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. Next of all, we're going to talk about Big Z Zdeno Chara. Zdeno Chara, he's one of the franchise greats, and he was massive. He did a massive, massive player. Great big impact on the blue line. And he was one of the team's best players. Of course, he'll always be remembered as the Bruins captain. But before he was in the Bruins, he was actually an Ottawa Senator. He played pretty well. He scored 95 points in just under 300 games with Senators. One away from hitting that 300 mark, 299. Yeah, he left the team via free agency when the Sens were forced to choose either Wade Redden or Zdeno Chara. They picked Redden, and then Chara went to the Bruins. Hindsight 2020, I would have probably picked Chara just because he had a longer career. Nothing against Wade Redden. He just didn't have as long of a career as Chara did. At the time, it was the right move.
Yeah, Redden was the offensive defenseman, right? But he fell off pretty quick after this.
Mostly due to injuries, but yeah. Unfortunately, his time in Ottawa didn't last too long after that. The Senators chose Redden and Chara went to the Boston Bruins. That part of the trade tree is done. So we're going to talk about that 2001 round draft pick. That 2001 draft pick ended up being the second overall pick. And do you remember who the Senators ended up choosing with that draft pick?
This little guy named Jason Spezza.
Complete nobody, eh? Complete nobody.
He is totally now.
He totally is now that he worked for the Leafs and don't care about him anymore. But no, all kidding aside, Jason Spezza, at the time that he left the Senators, he was regarded as one of the greatest Ottawa Senators to ever play. And he still is. He's one of the greats.
100%.
Sure, second. Yeah. Pretty sure he's second in goals, assists, and points, or along those lines. He's in the top three for sure, top five at the latest. They played really, really well for Senators. He scored 687 points in 686 games, and he owns three of the top 10 high-scoring seasons by Ottawa Senator. He also centered the most dominant line the team has ever seen, called the Pizza Line, between Danny Heatley and Daniel Alfredson. But that's just another thing he did. He's just a good player.
Got us free pizza.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was too young to remember that, but yes.
The amount of square slices I got for free, man, because of that line.
Yeah, the pizza line. Yeah. So Spets ended up requesting a trade out of Ottawa. And, well, nobody ever knows why he requested a trade. It was never brought to light. It was kind of believed that he just wasn't confident in the direction. He wanted to win a cup. He wanted a change to win a cup. So Brian Murray then decided to, you know what? We'll trade you. If you don't want to be here, we'll trade it. That's fine. You trade Spezza to the Dallas Stars in exchange for here, let me read it for you. It was Jason Spezza to the Dallas Stars in exchange for Ludwig Carlson, Alex Chiasson, Nick Paul, Alex Gupta, and a second round pick in the 2015 NHL draft. Carlson only played two AHL games for the Stars. Sorry, I forgot to mention that part. Ludwig Carlson. So it was Spezza and Ludwig Carlson for Chiasson, Nick Paul, and Gupta. Sorry, I misread that. So Carlson only played two games for the Stars in the AHL and played none in the NHL. He was let go after one season. Spezza, while he was only a shell of what he was in Ottawa, he is still a very productive second-line player for the Stars. His first two seasons were like above 60 points. First season was 62 points. Second season was 60. Next one after that was 50. Then it was 26 and 27. So like it was like a steady decline, but the guy was aging. I think he was 31 or 32 at the time of the trade. So he was in the back nine of his career. And after his time in Dallas, he eventually joined the Toronto Maple Leafs via free agency. Hate that part of his career. We're not going to talk about it. But now he's an assistant general manager in Pittsburgh. So good for him. That part of the trade tree is done. For the Ottawa Senators, at first glance, it was an underwhelming trade. And looking back, it's still kind of underwhelming. So Alex Chiasson, he played a couple of years in Ottawa. He played 2 years, actually. And he scored, I'm pretty sure, somewhere between 30 and 50 points. If I look it up, I get the exact number. But he scored at like a fourth line rate, right? Eventually, he was traded to the Calgary Flames in exchange for Patrick Cialoff. I don't like Patrick Cialoff, so we're not going to talk about him. He has nothing to do with this anyways. He played in one NHL game with the Ottawa Senators over N2 AHL season, and he left via free agency after he pretty much ended Clark McCarver's career. And it's just, I don't like him for that specific reason.
Yep.
He's a dick for what he did. On the ice, he's a dick. Off the ice, I don't know the guy, so I'm not going to speculate about that. But as a player, he ruined one of my favorite players' career, so I don't have any respect for him for that sense. It was friggin' training camp, man. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the next part of this is Cialoff was traded to the Anaheim Ducks for Brian Gibbons. And Gibbons played for 20 games with the Sens before leaving as a free agent. The Ducks traded Cialoff to the Lightning, Tampa Bay Lightning for Chris Mueller, and both Gibbons and Mueller left their team via free agency, so that part of the trade tree is done. Gupta played in one season in the AHL for the Senators, then he was traded after three games the following season. So he was traded to the Buffalo Sabres in exchange for Cole Schneider. He was traded alongside Cole Schneider and Eric Odell for Michael Sadow, or with Sadow, for Jason Atkinson, Jerome Leduc, and Phil Verone. Mm-hmm. So the only name I recognize here is Phil Verone. He played for Senators at one point. He played for Senators right there. And eventually all those pieces left via free agency. So that piece of the trade is done. Nick Paul was he drafted, the second round of the 2012 draft, I'm going to say it was?
Yeah, I believe so.
Something like that? Yeah. So he was kind of the big piece of the trade as the second round, as that trade. And he was supposed to be, like, a good NHL player. And it took him a while. It took him a long time, actually. But he eventually did. He became an NHL regular later on. And he played in, I'm going to say, two full seasons of Ottawa before he kind of priced himself out. Because Nick Paul is the perfect third-line player on any NHL team. He's exactly what you want in a third line. But he kind of priced himself out in terms of he wanted a longer-term contract than the Senators were willing to offer him based on his age. And that's fine. It happens. So he was traded to the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for Mathieu Joseph and a draft pick. So Mathieu Joseph still is an Ottawa Senator, and that draft pick has not been used yet. But we haven't finished talking about one piece in the trade. That 2015 second-round pick that was sent from the Stars to the Ottawa Senators, that hasn't been used. That hasn't been used in this discussion yet. So the Ottawa Senators got the 2015 second-round pick from the Dallas Stars. And this was traded to the New Jersey Devils in exchange for and a 2016 third-round pick in exchange for moving higher up in the draft to pick Gabriel Gagne. Gagne didn't pan out, obviously. Not in the NHL anymore, AHL. He's done playing hockey, and I'm pretty sure he's facing legal troubles. I'm not going to talk about that too much because I'm not exactly sure what exactly there, but I'm pretty sure he is. But with that trade, the New Jersey Devils were able to pick goaltender Mackenzie Blackwood. So, they took Mackenzie Blackwood, and with that third-round pick, it was later used to pick Joey Anderson. So Blackwood obviously isn't with the New Jersey Devils anymore. He left via free agency, but that's not important. He's not the main part of the deal. First of all, it sucks that we could have gotten Blackwood, a pretty good goaltender. Not a starter by any means, but a good backup. It would have been good to have him. It would have been good to have a good backup like to Craig Anderson for quite a while, because for a while we didn't. So it would have been good. But that part of the trade was lost, obviously. And Joey Anderson didn't do too much for the Devils. He's a depth player in the NHL level. He's more of an AHL player at this point, I believe. He was eventually flipped to the Toronto Maple Leafs in exchange for Andreas Johnsson. Johnsson's a good player. He just was making too much money. They needed to dump some cap. So they traded him for as low as they could, which was Joey Anderson. Joey Anderson was mostly an AHL player, like I just said. He played 20 games over his four seasons with the club. He was a good depth option to have for an injury call-up. But like he wasn't doing what they wanted. They wanted him to be a bigger part of the lineup. Eventually, the Toronto Maple Leafs used Joey Anderson as well as Pavel Gogolev, a 2025 first-round pick and a 2024 second-round pick to trade to the Chicago Blackhawks to get Sam Lafferty and Jake McCabe, and a pair of fifth-round picks in 2024 and 2025. So Joey Anderson is now on the Chicago Blackhawks at this point, right? Yeah. We're not going to talk about the other pieces of trade because it doesn't have much relevance yet. So Joey Anderson was part of the trade that not even Joey Anderson. Joey Anderson's not part of this anymore. He's done. Andreas Johnsson, who's now in the New Jersey Devils. This is where it kicks in. So Andreas Johnsson, he was a good depth option. He was a good depth option for the team for I think 2 years. Then he just wasn't good anymore enough to play in the lineup. So he was used in a trade between the Sharks and the Devils to that sent Timo Meier, Scott Harrington, Zachary Eman, Satiri Hataka, Timur Ibragimov, a 2024 fourth round pick to the Devils, and Andrea Johnson, Fabian Zetterlund, Nikita Okotoyuk, Shakir Mudulin, a 2023 first round pick and a 2024 conditional. So basically, in that way, if we're following it at the end of the day, the Ottawa Senators got Mathieu Joseph, 2024 first round pick. Tampa Bay Lightning got Nick Paul. The Toronto Maple Leafs got Jake McCabe, Sam Lafferty, and 2 5th round picks in 2024 and 2025. Chicago Blackhawks got Joey Anderson, a 2025 first round pick with this Jake McCabe trade, and it's 26 second round pick. The New Jersey Devils got Timo Meier, Santeri Ataka, and 2024 fifth round pick, and San Jose Sharks got Shakir Mukhamudulin, Fabian Zetterlund, Nikita Ukituyuk, Quentin Musty, and 2 draft picks, a second and a seventh. So that was a lot of verbal diarrhea, and I have no idea if you guys are still listening at this point, but that was a long trade tree, and a former colleague of mine, Jacob Billington, did all the work on that. I literally just read this article. I thought it was very interesting. I wanted to do a bit of a write-up on my own, but He just did a better job than I could have. So shout out to Jacob there. That was a very interesting fact of the day. What are your thoughts on that, Dave?
This is an extremely friggin' long tree of trades. It's one of those trades that you never think of stuff like that, but when you like follow it, and it's insane. I wonder how many other like NHL trades have gone down where there's a tree that's kind of like this. Where you're just like, man, I can't believe this guy plays for this guy all because it started here 10, 15 years ago. It's crazy.
There's a lot of them. And the Wayne Gretzky trade tree lasted a long, long time. You have to see it on that. I forget exactly how long it lasted. But the next one that comes to mind is Bobby Plager to the St. Louis Blues. Their first ever trade, actually. I forget the exact ramifications of it, but it was a 1967 season. It was their first ever trade at the expansion draft. And that trade tree continued from the 67 season to 1998. I forget the exact ramifications of it, but it lasted a long time.
Damn.
Yeah, and the Eric Lindros trade, I'm pretty sure, is still active to this day.
I didn't even think of that. Jesus.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Steve Dangle's trade trees, if you haven't noticed.
Steve Dangle's got a lot of time on his hands. It's great.
Yeah, he's
he does his research.
Oh, yeah, he does. Well, he's got a lot of people who does research for him, in all honesty, but he does do a lot of research himself. Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah. So, that's a fun fact of the day. Usually you're not this long. I just thought it was interesting to talk about. We'll get into the big piece of today. Michael Andlauer is finally the owner of the Ottawa Senators. Today,
finally.
Yes. So we're recording this today on Friday, September 22nd at just around 10 o'clock at nighttime, many hours after his press conference. And honestly, what are your quick thoughts before I give a quick verbal diarrhea about it?
I think he's got personality. He's got spunk. Which is important, especially to relate with the younger fan bases and the younger team. He said all the right things. One thing that really caught my attention was when they talked about new arena location, he was pretty much saying, we'll let the fans decide. We'll let the fans decide, which is amazing. He's listening to his fan base, right? And that's huge. That's not something we've had in Ottawa ever, right? And this is, I'm even talking about beyond Melnick, before even he came around. We've never had an owner that listens to the fans. So I think that's amazing. He's such a down-to-earth guy. It's crazy. And like when Cyril's microphone went down, Andlauer grabbed his own microphone and put it to Cyril's mouth as if he was interviewing him, right? And I just thought that was just so funny, right? Like you could have handed him the microphone, but nope, he held it there for Cyril. I don't know. He's such a down-to-earth guy. Like he said, he grew up from nothing in Montreal. And now the guy owns, you know, the Ottawa Senators. And another thing I really like is that he emptied his closet. All the Habs stuff is all gone.
His wife did for him.
Hopefully they donated it to somewhere, you know, decent. I was gonna say toss it in the garbage, but I got too much respect for the game to say that.
Yeah, I do too. I obviously, as you know, I'm a big jersey collector and I'm never gonna throw away a jersey. So I can't hate if he didn't throw them out. He probably donated them or gave them away, which is fine. But that's not the big piece of the thing. The big piece of the thing, and the most important thing, is we finally have a new owner. And the process lasted 321 days, so 10 months, almost 11. And Michael Andlauer finally takes primary ownership of the Ottawa Senators. The biggest piece of that includes Cyril Leader being brought back as CEO. And a job he should have never been fired from in the first place. So great. I'm very, very happy to see him right that wrong. And it was great because it was thanks to Cyril Leader that the Ottawa Senators are truly back and entered the NHL. He was one of the three main people who campaigned for that. Obviously, there are a lot of people involved, but the four faces, I guess, if you will, were Cyril Leader, Bruce Firestone. I'm blanking on the other name. There's one more person. And the player was Frank Finnegan. There's one more person involved, but I can't remember who else. There's a bunch of people, but he was one of the main ones, right? Yeah,
it's a breath of fresh air. I'm excited to see where we're going to be. Like, what I'm mostly saying is marketing the team. He knows how to market. He knows what he's doing. And so we're going to see way more fun stuff. I hope he puts himself in the media a bit more so we can kind of, you know, relate to him a bit more and get to know him better and stuff like that. He's definitely one of the boys. He plays hockey. You know, I'd like to see him, if I'm not wrong, I think he's a goalie. So I'd like to see him get smoked by Tim Stützle, just dangle and score on the owner and just have fun with it. You know, see him on the ice with some of the boys or, you know, friggin' at the bar singing with Brady Tkachuk. I could definitely see him doing something like that. So it's going to be fun again.
See, that's – I think Ann Lauer is going to be a great owner, but I do not want another owner interview by a player video.
God, no.
I'm sorry. That's no. One thing I don't want.
No, he even said it today. Like, he's going to be involved, but he's not making decisions. He goes, I hired people to make decisions. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why am I hiring the people to make the decisions?
Yeah, exactly.
I more want to see him involved in a sense of socializing with the boys, doing stuff with the team, events, having fun and stuff like that. That's kind of what I mean when I want to see him being more involved. Like I said, he's one of us. He needs to show that to the people, and we already know it, but we want to see more of it. And I think he's gonna open that door for us.
That's fair. I think. In terms of what I want Ann Lauer to be, I want him to be like Tampa Bay Lightning owner Jeff Vinnick, where deep pockets for one, which he does, cares about the market, cares about the team, which he both does, is willing to involve himself when needed, but doesn't micromanage. You know, he'll involve himself in doing everything he can to make the team more financially stable, stronger, better front office, engaging local businesses, being part of the community. Those areas I want him to be.
But an analytics department.
Yes. But I don't want him to come down into the GM's office and say, trade for this player, trade for that player, do this, do that. I don't want that. I want him to have yearly meetings and regular meetings, not yearly meetings, with hockey operations to lay out his expectations. But I do not want him to micromanage the team because we just had that, you know?
Yeah, you're the business owner. You're a hockey guy, but there's a reason why you have a general manager, because they're the ones who are the experts in managing the team.
Exactly. And I think that's exactly what he's going to do, and I'm very, very excited to see that. One thing I wanted to mention is – sorry, I killed the buck there. I was very happy to see that Aaron Crow, who's been – on and off with the team since I believe it was 2003. Yeah, 2003. 1996. So she joined the organization in 1996 as VP of Finance, then eventually was promoted CFO in 2003 and a lot of this other stuff. I was happy to see that she's going to retain her current title as CFO, but she's also being promoted to the Chief Operating Officer. So she's going to be Cyril Leader's right-hand man. And I'm very, very happy to see that because she's done a great job with Ottawa, and she just won the Best CFO in Ottawa Award by the Ottawa Business Journal last year. So she's very, very good at what she does, and I'm happy that that's going to continue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
With Cyril Leader coming back, I want to say, obviously, he never should have lost that job. It should have always been his job until the day he dies or whatever. Or a day, either until the day he dies or the day he decides, you know what, I want to retire. Whatever comes first.
Yeah, right? And he is going to be – I think Ann Lauer by himself can really build relationships with the community. But I think Cyril Leader is going to be the gap that we've been missing, and he's going to be – he'll bring back a lot of the relationships. Like, he's loved by everybody. That guy is gold, man. He really is.
Like, he said in a press conference today that when he resigned from Myers to rejoin the Senators, they didn't want him to go.
Yeah.
And obviously, nobody would. Nobody would want him to go. But no. Yeah.
But that's when the Ottawa Senators come knocking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Another few errors that I wanted to mention really quickly and kind of got your thoughts on is I really like that Ann Lauer involved local businesses, because obviously right now, before moving to Ottawa and Westboro, and Lauer, Michael, actually, I'll start calling Michael, that's what he wants to call it. He involved himself with 11 partners in his bids. Three of these partners these partners include Rocco Tullio, the owner of the OHL's Austin Generals, Joel Fledberg, OHL's Guelph Storm, four other unnamed CHL team owners that we don't know yet. He centered himself around guys like the Malhotra family, Jeff York, Ted Wexstaff, and a bunch of local unnamed investors, but they're all local. So I like that. He could have just gone with what he knew. He could have gone to the people he knows in Toronto. But he knew that it was important to the fan base to have people that are already involved with the local scene. So I'm very, very happy about that. Next thing I'm happy about is I was very happy to see that he was bringing up Gatineau as much as he possibly could and even spoke in French during the press conference. As many of you already know, French is my first language. It's what I think in. It's what I speak to as much as I can. In work, it's not always easy. At home, I try my best. French is my first language. And Lauer made it extremely he made it clear that he intends and putting a lot more focus on the Francophone side of the fan base, which honestly is a side of the fan base that has been neglected for quite some time. And it's good to see that that's going to be changed, because Gatineau is a very, very crucial part of the team's market. At some point, I'm pretty sure I read that before a few years ago. At this market, that 30% of the season ticket holders lived in Gatineau. So that's incredibly important to focus on. You could grow more fans there, and you've got players who are from there. Claude Giroux lived a long time in Hull. He's from Ottawa. Thomas Chabot's French. Maître Joseph is French. Boku Amama's French. Even if you want to talk Derek Brassard, who's not with the team anymore, but he very well could come back in a front office role at some point in the future. I don't know for sure.
Pajot was from Gatineau.
Yes, Pajot was from Gatineau. Even Pierre Dorion, he's French. Pierre Dorion is French. You know, it's yeah. It'd be stupid to ignore the French side of the fan base any longer than it already has been.
And right? Gatineau does have also a lot of 50-50 split fans. And I know this because I spent a lot of time in Gatineau growing up. There's a lot of guys and girls out there who will have mom as a Sens fan or dad as a Sens fan and the other one as a Habs fan.
Yeah.
This will also help convert, you know, the ones that are kind of borderline and bring them to the dark side. You know what I mean? Like, Come to us. But I definitely think he's gonna resonate a lot better with the French population. I think it's very important because, like you said, my first language is French as well. I've lost a lot of it living in Alberta now, but I still speak it. But it's very important to me to have a bilingual owner. It is very important to me.
Yeah, and to see him be able to switch from English to French flawlessly was a very minor detail, but it made me happy.
Fair. By the way, I think I said resonate instead of resonate.
All good. I know what you meant. Yeah, I know what you meant. With that being said, though, let's go back right to the next piece of discussion. To put it simply, I'm so happy to have a new owner, and I want to just take a second to highlight, how important Eugene Melnyk was to the Ottawa Senators. Of course, his time as team owner ended, in a very complicated way, to put it lightly.
Hostile.
Yeah, hostile. It's In a way, yeah. I guess that's not the word I was looking for, but it's a word to describe it.
Yeah, between fans and him, it was hostile. Yeah. Some players, I'm assuming as well, too, from what we've heard.
Yeah. I'm just going to say it this way. So the Senators, obviously, in 2003, were about to go bankrupt. Eugene Melnyk came and swooped in and saved the day. He was the only buyer interested in keeping the team in Ottawa. So clearly, NHL picked him. So Melnyk saved the team, hosted an Eagles contest. Obviously, I'm too young to remember that. But I will always forever be in debt to Melnyk and the Melnyk family for keeping my favorite team in the National Capital Region.
100%.
Yeah. He had an extremely complicated legacy in the end. But I was doing some research, and I actually figured I'd explain something here. If you look at most owners in the NHL, for example, you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, they got the MLSE. Who owns MLSE? Do you know?
Was it going to be the Toronto Sports, whatever the...
Yeah. So
I think they own the Leafs.
Yeah. So the Toronto Maple Leafs are owned by Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. Do you know who owns that group?
Bell and Rogers, isn't it?
Yes. Bell, Rogers, Larry Tannenbaum. Bell and Rogers, if you're not in Canada, are the two biggest telecommunications company in Canada. They pretty much monopolized phone service, internet service, and TV service. They're in charge of it all, essentially.
Which is why we pay $100 a month for cell phones.
Yeah, but that's a topic for another day. Yeah, but they own the Toronto Maple Leafs as well as other sports teams, as well as Larry Tannenbaum. Those guys, they don't own the Maple Leafs to make money off of them. They own the Maple Leafs because it's cool to own the Maple Leafs.
Status.
Yeah. If you look at another one here I was looking at, Bill Foley of the Vegas Golden Knights, he made his money as a lawyer. He was a lawyer who eventually started investing and started Fidelity National Financial, Black Knight Incorporation, a bunch of other things. He's just an avid business owner who has a lot of money. Mm-hmm. He owns the Vegas Golden Knights as a status thing. He doesn't give a crap if he makes any money off of them. I don't think he even has any money. Any money he makes on the team, he spends it right back on the team.
Yeah, he's a majority owner, right? Because Vegas has minority owners as well. Quite a few.
It's a very, very big consortium, but he owns 51% of the team. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
If you look at Michael Andlauer, he made his money first by starting a trucking company. After that, he branched into healthcare. He still owns both companies. Then he branched into the AHL, where he bought the Hamilton Bulldogs at the time. That team relocated. Then he bought the OHL's Hamilton Bulldogs. And that's very complicated. I'm not going to get into it today. After that, he buys the Ottawa Senators and the Belleville Senators. His money's not coming from the Ottawa Senators. His money's coming from ATS Healthcare and ATS Transportation. He's not going to make money off the Senators, at least for a while. He's not going to look to make money off the Senators. He's going to want to break even, and that's what he's going to want.
Yeah, right? he's going to make money, but by the time he's made back the money he's put into it, his family or his kids will probably end up owning the team by then. It's going to take a long time.
Yeah, that's not where I was going with it, but sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where I was trying to go with was Melnyk, of course, he started with healthcare. He owned BioVail, right? But BioVail got in a lot of trouble, got his fingers tapped, and he had to sell the company and relinquish all of his control and not serve in any public company for 5 years. This was right after a recession in 2011, just 3 years after a recession. So he bought the team for $92 million. The team probably costs him about $150 million to operate every year, if not more. So that's just to math it out here. 92 plus, so 150. So between 2003 and 2011. So 150, that's what, 8 years? So 92 million. So that's almost $1.3 billion that he spent on the team.
Mm-hmm.
In 8 years.
Yep. And we don't know what the profit was every year, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. I'm going to say, just for simplicity's sake, he probably just broke even or came close to it. That's what I'm going to guess, right? Well, when he had to sell BioVail, he didn't sell it for that much. He sold it for a lot less than that. I don't remember the exact number, but he lost money on that deal. And after that, he was not allowed to buy any companies. He was not allowed to serve as a CEO or collect salaries from any publicly traded company anywhere. He wasn't allowed. So for between 2011 and 2016, he was not allowed to do this. He had to serve as just the Ottawa Senators owner. So that's 6 years where he wasn't making any money anywhere else and had to rely on the Senators to feed his family, continue paying for the Senators, and obviously deal with the expensive lifestyle that he became accustomed to, right?
Yeah.
So that hurt financially for him, 100%. I'm not trying to defend the things he did wrong. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to provide context.
Yep.
I don't intend to speak ill of the dead. That's not my intention at all. I'm just trying to provide context when I say this. A lot of what he did was probably fueled by a lot of stress and a lot of need to make money to keep the team afloat. Because like it or not...
Tried to save money where you could too, right?
Yeah. Because like it or not, sports teams are extremely expensive to run. They're incredibly expensive to run. And he had to cut corners in ways that he could by obviously lowering his payroll to the team by having an inner salary cap, having a super thin front office and all that. So he had to, he just couldn't afford it. Whereas all these other guys like Bill Foley, MLSC, Michael Landlatter, all these Jeff Molson, all these people have a shit ton of money to throw the team. He just didn't have it. He just didn't. So that's why the Senators could not operate as big as they should have. And that's why things went wrong there. And while it ended horribly, I will never speak well of Eugene Melnyk simply based on the fact that he did the best he could with the cards that he was dealt. Obviously, that whole thing with BioVail was ended up being his fault. What he did was he trusted the... So when he bought the Senators, he resigned as CEO and stopped running. He trusted other people to run BioVail. And those people really messed up. And he was the one who paid for it because he paid them to do what they did, essentially. He trusted the wrong people, and ultimately it cost him his entire career, which is depressing to think about. It really, really is. And it shows the importance of really making sure that if you're a business owner and you want to hire someone, you really have to make sure it's the right decision to hire the right person. You got to be very diligent. And I don't know why I'm talking about hiring proper people. I don't know why that got here. But the main point is Eugene Melnyk had a very complicated legacy in Ottawa. But the simple fact of the matter is it's not simple. It's not a simple situation. There was so much that he wanted to do, but he couldn't just because he didn't have the money to. And even if all that being considered, he still did more than he could, than he should have. He bought the Binghamton Senators to move them to Canada to make it easier for prospects to go from Belleville to Ottawa instead of Binghamton to Ottawa. It's a 3-hour drive instead of a fucking 7-hour flight. Yeah, sorry, my language.
No, that's okay. He did a lot of charity work too.
Oh, he did too. Yeah.
Like his annual skate with the kids and stuff like that. Yeah. Like that was something that was cool. Like I hope current ownership kind of keeps that tradition because I think that was important for the community.
Definitely will. Anna and Olivia hosted it this year, but they'll continue to host it, I'm willing to bet. And like I said, it's a very complicated legacy, but it's a legacy that must be talked about in the best way we can. And obviously, he wasn't a perfect guy, but nobody else is. He did the best he could, right?
Yeah. As far as his like personal flaws, again, we're not going to speak of him, right? It's what did he do for this team and the players, and like we would not have Andlauer without Melnyk.
Precisely. This Ottawa Senators would be in Hamilton or somewhere else right now, Frigg. Yeah. Thank BlackBerry for that. But now we're going to conclude that. We're going to move on to the next. We're going to talk about some quick NHL news. The first one is really, really quickly. I just figured I'd bring it up because it has something to do with the Senators. So the Vancouver Canucks recently named defenseman Quinn Hughes as their captain. Quick thoughts on you. What are your thoughts on this?
A lot of NHL teams are becoming less and less reluctant to name a young guy a captain. Before it would be for example, right now you just saw Marchand just get named captain, mm-hmm. right? He's on his way out the door pretty soon too. Like he's not very young either. But now, like nowadays, like I said, there's a bunch of young captains all over the league. And I think it's a good thing because if you know said player is ready for the responsibility, won't fold under the pressure, then go for it. It's what we did with Brady, right? Same thing. If Hughes can handle it, then it's a good call. He's an amazing defenseman. He's probably going to be a Hall of Famer one day if he keeps going the way he's going.
Like that's a hot take.
Oh, dude. But if he keeps going the way he's going, he's going to be one of the best to do it. He's going to be one of the best to do it.
That's fair. That's fair.
Oh, yeah. He's going to have a spot right next to Tyler Ennis in the Hall of Fame.
Tyler Ennis, the greatest to ever do it.
Oh. Exactly. So, I think Hughes is a great choice. And honest to God, I don't know if you're going to bring up Chicago, but Chicago's not going to have a captain this year, and I think it's because they're going to hold out and just give it to Bedard next year. They're going to give him the Crosby treatment, or sorry, the McDavid treatment, where they're just going to hold off a little bit because
he's on the Crosby.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, they Mario had it, and then they gave it to him after Mario was gone.
Yeah,
all these superstars, they get it, and it's going to be the same thing. And yeah. Bedard's going to excel in Chicago, and it's, you know what I mean. But same thing. Young captains are becoming a normal thing.
So I will correct you right there. When Crosby is drafted, Mario Lemieux was retired. So I'll say that right now. There was no captain.
There was no captain. You're right. It was the year after.
Yeah. Yeah. But what happened was they offered Crosby the captaincy the second he was drafted. He said, no, I'm not ready for it. So what happened then is Mario Lemieux goes, you know what? Maybe you're not ready for it now. But if I come back and teach you, you'll be ready next year. And that's exactly what happened.
Oh, yeah. And you're right. I totally forgot about that. But, yeah. Okay. So it was Crosby's second year then.
Yeah. So it was Crosby's third year. It was his third year because he didn't get it. He got it in his age 19 turning 20 season. So that was his third year.
Oh, okay. I thought it was his second season.
No. But, so first year it was Malcolm Lemieux. Second season, no captain. Third year it was Crosby. I don't know why I know that.
It's part of the job. But yes, younger captains are becoming normal. And I think it's a good thing.
Look at Gabriel Landeskog in Colorado. He got it in his 19-year season. McDavid got it in his 19-year season. Brady Tkachuk got it in his stage 22-year season. Bo Horvat got it a little later. I think Bo Horvat was 25 when he got it. Same thing with Dylan Larkin. Like they're not always giving it out to old guys anymore, which is fine. Like, I think the team captain should be whoever has the ability to take that leadership role while also serving as the face of the franchise.
How old was Mercer when he got it in Jersey?
Mercer?
Isn't that who has a C in Jersey?
No, it's Nico Hischier. He was 22.
But oh, shit, point. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Dawson Mercer. Not Dawson Mercer. Nico Hischier.
You can tell how much I care about the Devils.
All good. All good. That's all good. Yeah. It's like at this point, if he's ready for it, he's ready for it. But I will say, before taking the captaincy, he spoke to three people, like Quinn Hughes. He spoke to three people. The first person was the outgoing captain, Bo Horvat, who was obviously traded to the New York Islanders. He talked to Elias Pettersson, who was on the team. You wonder who else he talked to? Brady Tkachuk.
I thought that was going there.
Yeah. He talked to Brady Tkachuk, and they all told him he'd be great at the job, and that's why he accepted it. Right? Yeah. And it goes to show how well respected Brady Tkachuk is in the NHL locker room, and it's truly nice to see how well respected Ottawa's leadership is throughout the league.
Yeah, the fan base gives Brady shit, but that's just because his name is Tkachuk and he's related to Matthew. Everyone who always calls Brady like cheap and all that stuff, like, you obviously have never watched Brady. Because Brady's not a cheap guy. I'm like, he doesn't have the same antics that Matthew has on the ice. Brady's a clean player. He'll beat the crap out of you and he'll score.
I'll stop you right there because Matthew Tkachuk has also really, really calmed down. He has. He's embraced a completely different role. He's a Brad Marchand in terms of like Brady Tkachuk, Brad Marchand, and Matthew Tkachuk are all the same breed.
He's Brad Marchand without the looking.
But hey, did you know that Brad Marchand is no longer considered a repeat offender in the NHL's database?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that is so stupid. Why? Because he went 2 years without being suspended.
Exactly. The second. So what happens is within the CBA, and most jobs have it like this too. Mm-hmm. After a certain amount of time, if you haven't been disciplined in a certain amount of time, it gets taken away from your record. At my job, I believe it's 18 months or something like that. At your job, I don't know how long it is, but in the NHL, it's 2 years.
Watch out, 2023-24 season. Brad Marchand is coming.
He hasn't been disciplined in 4 years. The last time he was disciplined, I'm pretty sure, was in the 2018-19 season where he got a 10-game suspension.
Yeah, wasn't that for like a stick to the balls? Like, didn't he?
Something like that.
I thought he speared somebody or something. Hmm.
Yeah, but he has definitely calmed down his game quite a lot.
He has. I'll give him that. He's definitely, he's still a pest, but he's not. I used to think he was like a little screws loose in the head or something. I think he's calmed down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with that though, I'm going to take a break from hockey really quickly to talk about our very generous sponsor, DraftKings. We're back with another week of football, and DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in on the NFL action with great offers every single game day. New customers, so Dave, you, me, your grandma, and your dog, all of us, we can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Throw $5 down, 5 shekels, on any of this week's epic matchups to walk away an instant winner. And DraftKings is not stopping there. All customers can take advantage of 2 new offers every single game day this September. That sounds cool, eh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Football is more fun when you're in on the action. So download the app now and sign up with code THPN. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, with code THPN, the crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.t1800gambler.net in New York. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369 in Connecticut. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino Sports and Resorts, licensee partner Golden Nugget Lake Charles in LA. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Vote in Ontario. See sportsbooks.draftkings.com/football terms for eligibility. Terms and responsible gaming resources. Bonus bets expire 7 days after they're issued. And eligibility and deposits restrictions apply.
And we're back. So now we're going to talk about this whole BioSteel situation. Do you know a bit about that, Dave, or do you want me to get right into it?
No, I know a little. Like, I didn't go too in-depth. It was just crazy because, like, Gatorade was gone. BioSteel became a thing. Everyone's been drinking the BioSteel drinks and stuff like that. And then they filed for bankruptcy. And it's just like, I don't understand where financially their woes came from.
Oh, I maybe can tell you.
That's about to say. So that's pretty much the extent of what I know. I'm expecting for you to educate me. So let's do this.
I did some homework. First of all, do you know who founded BioSteel?
I know. I just can't remember who.
Former NHLer Michael Camilleri.
There you go. Mike Camilleri. That's what I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. He founded the company while still playing in the NHL. So I will say stick taps to Mike Camilleri for finding a career after hockey. So BioSteel, obviously, as you said, they're the current NHL sports drink provider, but they've filed for bankruptcy protection in the United States and Canada. So Camilleri founded the company in 2009. But in 2019, he sold the company to Canopy Growth, which I don't know if you know, but it's an Ontario-based cannabis company. So they sell marijuana and the derivatives from that, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 2022, so here's when I get into the finances. So I was able to find last year's stats in the first quarter for this year. So in 2022, their operating costs came to $150 million, while their sales only generated $17 million. Obviously, that's $133 million in loss. So this year,
They spend approximately $15 million per month on marketing. That's pretty much as they generate in revenue the entirety of last year. Entering this year, they laid off 181 of 190 employees. So currently, they have 9 employees.
Shit.
This year, their numbers are a little better, but still not great. In the first quarter, so the first 4 months of the year, they sold $23 million, which is more than they got last year, which is good. Mm-hmm. But their operating costs are $114 million. So in 4 months, they spent $40 million less than they did all of last year.
I don't math means, very well, but that doesn't sound good.
Yeah. So in 4 months, they lost $91 million in losses. And if I'm going to do some quick math real quick, in a year and 4 months, $133 plus $91 million.
So you do this, carry that. That's a fuck ton. Yeah, it's called a fuck ton. Yeah,
that's $224 million in losses in just 16 months. Jeez. That's just ridiculous. So obviously, Canopy Growth's like, I don't want this anymore. Get rid of it. So they've been trying to sell the group, and as many as 24 groups have been interested, but only 6 groups ended up making an actual bid. One of these bid had quote-unquote former management involved. No idea who that is. Maybe it's Camilleri, maybe it's someone else. I don't know. But none of these offers were enough to cover the operating costs that Canopy Growth has to pay to their creditors. So obviously they cannot approve the sale. So I don't know if this is an exact rule, but my understanding of the situation is when Eugene Melnyk bought the Senators, most of the money that he paid to went towards the debts that Rod Brydon had incurred. Mm-hmm. So whenever Canopy Growth sells this company, it's going to be the same thing. They have to, the new buyer has to pay off the debts that Canopy Growth amassed.
Before they could buy the team.
Exactly. Yeah. And whatever's left after that, Canopy Growth gets. But in this case, I don't think it'll be much because in obviously 16 months worth of data, $224 million. And they know they've owned the company since 2019. So
you wonder if a big company like Gatorade or something, which is owned by Coca-Cola, I think, would come in and
screw them up. I don't think they can because then at that point they'd have an actual monopoly over the sports drink market, and that's not allowed.
Yeah, Pepsi.
There's laws to prevent that. Yeah, but that would put them over a threshold.
Either way, I wonder if another company doesn't come in and do this, right?
Yeah. So at some point they're most likely gonna end up bought. But I will say I'm very happy that Michael Camilleri got out of it before it went this crazy. And I will personally say I'm not a big fan of Bio Steel. I gave them so many chances. Like I tried them so many times and just couldn't get into it. I like Coca-Cola. I like Gatorade, which is my drink of choice. But go ahead.
I was just gonna say G-Zeros. That's what I drink too. So
that's fair. Yeah. My drink of choice is obviously the blue one. But what I was going with is when I think of BioSteel, I actually think back to my house league hockey days. So my final year playing house league, my team had this goalie. His name, I'm not gonna say his name, but he's a great guy, really, really great guy. But he wasn't the best goalie. He's just, for whatever reason, he was a better boxer than he was a hockey player because he boxed too, right? He loved hockey. He was a house league goalie. Obviously, we weren't going to win anything anytime soon. But he was one of the weaker goalies in the league. And midway throughout the season, it was just so funny how it happened. We had a hockey tournament, and for some reason, someone gave us a BioSteel drink or whatever. I'm like, hey, buddy, take this. I put it in his water bottle. He drank it. Shut out. Didn't allow a goal for the rest of the tournament.
Jesus.
Yeah. So obviously, we started buying. Everybody in the team started taking turns giving him a BioSteel drink for that game, and for the rest of the season, he was so good.
Throw some four leaf clovers in that lad.
It just goes to show how crazy hockey players are when it comes to superstitions.
Hey, man, I was going to say, there's some people who superstitions are so strong that it really does work. Mm-hmm. When I played football, I had to put on a brand new pair of ankle socks each game, and then I would throw them out.
Yeah.
Such a waste, but.
Yeah. When I play hockey, I put my left I put my left leg pad, like my shin pad on my right shin pad, but I hit my right skate, then my left skate. It's like a crisscross thing. It was weird.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. But yeah, I hope that situation sorts out with Canopy Growth. And let's move on to the next segment of Be the GM. So today, on today's segment of Be the GM, we're going to talk about two situations. The first one being the Shane Pinto situation. The second being the Josh Bailey situation. Dave, I'm going to ask you. You're Pierre Dorion. Pierre Dorion. What do you do with Shane Pinto?
First off, I trade Branstrom over Joseph, which is what everyone's saying, Joseph. But I think Branstrom is easier to replace than Joseph. Joseph is very fast. He's a PK specialist. He's very defensively responsible on the ice. He's dropped offensively, but I think he can bring his numbers back up. So I think you move Branstrom, then you bridge Pinto, and then you tell Pinto that once G's contract is up, then you'll give him a bit more than what we're offering over the next 2 years, for example. That's what I think we should be doing with Pinto.
That's fair. I can agree with that. I think that right now you're right in saying that Branstrom has more value than Mathieu Joseph. And I like Mathieu Joseph. I do. And I think he's a very, very important player to this team in terms of depth scoring. But in terms of forwards right now, he is paid like a third liner, correct? You think he makes $2.7 million or something like that? Over the next 3 years, something like that. It's close to $3 million.
Yeah, 2.91 or something.
Yeah, something like that. It's close to $3 million. And trading him away would be just enough to sign Pinto right away. So as much as I like Joseph, he's not going to play in the top nine this year, next year, or likely the year after that by the time his contract is done. So that's why I incline on trading him first. But I understand and kind of agree with your point to trade with Branstrom. I love Eric Branstrom, and I think he's a very good player. But he's too good to be a third-pairing defenseman.
And we have a lot of guys ready to step up.
Yeah. We have Tyler Cleven, Jacob Bernard-Docker, Lassie Thompson. We have the new guy we signed who's going to probably push for a seventh defenseman role in a couple of years. I can't remember his name, the 6'7" guy.
He's a big monster.
Yeah, he's probably going to push for like a seventh defenseman role, I'm going to say 3-4 years.
Yeah, like I said, right now we got guys that can
replace. Embarrassment of riches. So those two players that are players I highlight and potentially trading away. Yeah. I would lean towards trading Joseph first, but I could fully understand both of them. Something that I've seen someone talk about online was trading Forsberg. I disagree with this completely. I don't think trading Forsberg is the issue. Forsberg has 2 years on his contract left, and whenever Forsberg's done, Ottawa probably moves on from him. Him promotes Mads Søgaard to backup goalie role. Mads Søgaard's not ready yet for the full-time NHL. He's going to be called up when he needs to be, but he's not fully ready yet. He needs at least one more year in the A, and after that, sure, whatever.
Yeah, like, after that, he needs to back up a pro and learn from a pro. Because Sogi didn't back up a pro. Yeah, I mean, Tavares was injured most of the time, right? Like, So he needs to learn from a starting goalie too.
Yeah, and his time in the AHL, he was a starter last year, he's a starter this year. Last year, he got to learn a bit from Bebo, but he played like 3 games in the AHL last year. Yeah. It's not much. Bebo's not the team anymore.
Yeah.
And so. Bebo's an AHL goalie, right?
Yep.
So he needs another year to learn. And then after Forsberg's gone, he could learn from Korpisalo. And in Korpisalo's last year of his deal, he could probably fight for that last role. And Korpisalo would be traded away. And that's it. That's your problem. And Ottawa's not solos. It's dealt with.
Or Korpisalo is good for his entire contract. And he comes into his A game at the age that he's at now. And he just becomes our goalie long term, like Andy.
Craig Anderson. Yeah. Craig Anderson. Yeah.
But no, trading Forsberg is bad.
Oh, yeah. Next one, though, is what about Josh Bailey? What do you think about him? What do you think happens with him?
I think if the Pinto situation doesn't get settled, then he starts at that 3C position. But let's just say, for example, they have to sweeten the pot by moving Joseph and Brandy or something. Then you could put Bailey on the wing. He's not as fast as he would be next to like Kubalik and Pinto, but he's smart. He reads the plays. He knows where the play is going to be before he gets there.
Yeah.
And worst case scenario, he'd be really good in the fourth line. Cause right now our fourth line It's just a bunch of friggin' muffin mashers. There's nobody to... Yeah, there's a bunch of muffin mashers. So somebody that could put some points up, you know what I mean? And play on the PK. So, I mean, there's a spot for him. I really do think that.
So I'm going to put it simply this way. I think I think Josh Bailey's this year's Derek Brassard. And Josh Bailey's not what he used to be. At his best, he's a second-line playmaking center. But right now, at this point in his career, he's a defense-first forward who can be a penalty-kill specialist, which is exactly what we need of him, and can primarily play in a fourth-line spot, but play up in a lineup when needed on a short-term basis, exactly like Derek Brassard did last year. He played some time on the second line, played some time on the first line, played some time on the third line, played some time in all three forward positions, center, left, and right wing. I think that's going to be Bailey's role this year. Going to create some competition in training camp. Ultimately, if Pinto's signed, he'll have that fourth line left wing spot. If he's not signed, he'll have the third line center spot until Pinto's back. Pretty simple, right?
Yep, an agreement.
Yeah, and that's really it for today's episode. Really, we got everything talked about really quickly. It's still a bit of a longer episode, and once I'm done trimming this down, we'll probably be closer to 50 minutes. And honestly, that's exactly what I want for this type of episode. Again, I wanted to say I'm sorry for last week's, I think it was an hour and a half episode. There was just so much to talk about.
Oh, yeah. But you know what, man? That's why we have two episodes a week, because there's always so much to talk about, right?
Oh, yeah. Once we get into the thick of things, episodes will be shorter. It's just because while we're starting out, there's a lot of stuff to be talked about, right?
Yeah.
So recapping today's episode, we talked about Michael Landlauer. We talked about how Timo Meier is a New Jersey Devil thanks to Ottawa Senators. Completely thanks to Ottawa. All Ottawa Senators, all thanks to that, right?
Oh, yeah. You're welcome, New Jersey, for Timo Meier. Oh, yeah. It's all because of us. We take full credit.
Oh, yeah. We talked about the BioSteel situation, talked about Quinn Hughes, and that was really it for today. If you want, you can follow myself on Twitter at Jake LeRevere. You can find Dave on Twitter at GD_HockeyTalk. And most importantly, follow our show at SomeSense. You can find our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Hopefully soon we're going to get back on iHeart Radio. And you can also see us on YouTube. You can see my ugly face on YouTube. So
don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah, no. At the end of the day, go Sens go. It is the beginning of a new era.
Yes, sir.